Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
One that really gives us some insight into the shifts in luxury and premium brands across the globe. They continue to see strong value growth in 2025 despite sector slowdown concerns. And after that back and forth regarding the tariffs between the US and China, well, I can imagine that might have added a spanner into the works. We're joined now by Valuation Director at Brand Finance, based in London, Henry Farr, to help us unpack the latest report that really gives us some context into some of the world's most valuable luxury and premium brands. Who's still favorable and who isn't? Thank you so much for the correction. Thank you again for your time tonight and for joining us, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. I guess first things first, when anyone thinks about premium and luxury brands, we often think uber luxury brands like Porsche, Chanel, Louis Vuitton, Hermes, and so many more. But perhaps let's just start by the collation of the data of this report. You know, what do you look at to really view the value of the brand versus just the monetary cost that's typically associated with it?
Sure. So we're looking at a number of factors here. Of course, we're looking at the value of the brand. So you can break that down into a couple of factors. One, we ultimately want to know how much money these brands are making. You know, how much revenue is your Chanel or your Dior or Louis Vuitton generating in a given year? And how much do we expect them to make in the future? Next, we want to understand what people think about these brands. Do they enjoy using them? Do they intend to keep using them in the future? Do they want to recommend them to their friends, which is often a really powerful measure of brand equity? So we conduct lots of research among wealthy individuals around the world. We also do this for mass market products as well and B2B products. But in this instance, we're surveying a number of wealthy individuals from around the world to understand how much they love their luxury products, understand which the strongest brands are, and then also understand which ones are generating financial returns. And all of that contributes to how we determine the brand value of these luxury products.
100%. And I think this is so intriguing, right? Because it's quite a process and a lot of data that you do actually collate. So maybe let's take a look at some of the top five brands so far, which appear to be well-esteemed. And that's the likes of vehicle brand Porsche, Chanel, Louis Vuitton, Hermes, as well as Rolex. Help us understand how they actually get these AAA and AAA plus rankings and what influences the value that's perceived.
Sure. So there's some quite interesting stories in that top five, really. I mean, Porsche has been the number one luxury brand according to our results, and I want to emphasize that none of this is our opinions. This is all based on financial valuations. And Porsche is a great example of a brand that has taken legacy, prestige, heritage of being a traditional German automobile maker, but moved with the times. I think we all know that in luxury, in auto especially, we're moving towards a sustainable future, led by Tesla, led by BYD of China. And these auto brands have had to innovate. In luxury autos, more than any sector across any, whether it be a luxury or mass market, in luxury autos, we see that sustainability is incredibly important to a consumer when deciding which car to buy. Mm-hmm. And Porsche is a great example of a brand that's taken that heritage, but continued to innovate, and they've innovated by investing in sustainable future. So they're releasing lots of electric vehicles that help them maintain that strong heritage of quality, but still look to the future. Conversely, brands like Chanel have done brilliantly with partnerships, aligning themselves with the Met Gala or Timothy Chalamet, and they've also focused on their physical stores. When we talk about luxury, we are talking about creating as many touch points with the consumer as you can. When I buy clothes, I'm a luxury clothes buyer, I will buy my apparel often online. I don't mind about the experience. I want to get some clothes that work for me. Mm-hmm. For a luxury consumer, they need to create those special touch points, those special moments where you can go to a shop in Paris or Milan or London, and entering a Chanel shop or a Dior shop is a really special experience. Mm-hmm. So they're creating something unique for their customers. And then finally, the other brand I want to talk about in that top five is Rolex. Yes. So Rolex really focus on sports partnerships as a means to communicate with their audience. We find in our research that wealthier consumers are much less likely to see traditional advertising, be that on billboards or television or in a newspaper, probably because they're quite busy people. Mm-hmm. But they do tend to watch certain sports more than others. So golf, tennis, sailing are incredibly popular among a luxury audience. And Rolex positions themselves alongside these events, particularly tennis by being a partner at Wimbledon, or golf where they're a partner of the European Tour, because they know that's where they can engage with their potential customer base. So hopefully that goes to show that there are a lot of ways to establish yourself as a top luxury brand, but the key always comes down to creating something unique and elite that isn't really available to the mass market consumer.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because it helps us then unpack, you know, how these brands speak to their clientele and customer base essentially. What also stood out for me was brand value by industry, and apparel leads the charge by a mile over automobiles, cosmetics and personal care, even champagne and wine. Does this also speak to the size of these particular industries within the context of the global economy?
Sure, of course. We see a lot more money is ultimately spent on clothing at that top level. We all know that a luxury consumer might have multiple cars, but there is a limit, really, to how big your garage is. And yet, with fast fashion at the top level, I mentioned that sustainability has become really important in luxury autos for consumers. We've seen it in luxury apparel and cosmetics, but to a lesser extent. We're still seeing a high level of consumerism, I would say, and not to say it's a bad thing for those individuals buying the products, but we still see that an incredible amount of revenue is spent on these. And they also are quite well able to also generate revenue by targeting an affordable luxury segment. And by that, I mean a kind of mid-level income segment who might treat themselves with a luxury car, sorry, not car, a luxury t-shirt or jumper or handbag, maybe once in a while, because the luxury option isn't quite affordable, but there is an affordable segment. Whereas something with a car, you can afford a Porsche or you can't. So it's quite hard for them to drop down. Whereas with apparel, they're able to generate revenue beyond just the super wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Got you on that one. We can't ignore the fact, right, Henry, that just earlier this year, a few weeks ago, really, beginning of April, on the back of the tariffs that were imposed by Donald Trump on Liberation Day, what we actually saw was this back and forth and fallout, primarily between the US and China, but also impacted the view and perception of luxury brands, given that majority of them, or some of them, are actually manufactured in China. That, of course, was part of, you know, much social media content that was created at that particular time and distributed. But we also saw a lot of these design houses coming forward to provide clarity on certain aspects of their items that aren't produced in China. Has that played any influence in the outcomes of your report? And speaking about China, if we take a look at how they fare on the brand value by country, 0.5% versus the likes of France, just under half at 48.7% of brand value of luxury goods at a global scale. Help us, I guess, contextualize if the trade war and or tariffs had any impact on the perception of value of particular brands, especially those that might have been said to be produced in China.
I think that's a really interesting question. It's definitely going to be one facing a lot of executive members in these companies in the forthcoming year. Our research was conducted kind of at the turn of the year, so we're not yet factoring it in, but I can speak to what I would expect us to say. I think it's really telling that these brands come out immediately to address this, okay? Because they understand that their brand equity is built on the perception of their brands. Ultimately, you know, it doesn't possibly matter where it's made. It matters how it makes the consumer feel. Uh-huh. It matters that somebody is believing they're getting a quality product, and usually they are. So I think the most telling thing from a brand's perspective is the speed at which those companies sought to address these possibly changing perceptions. They got out in front of it pretty quickly because they understand, as the premium brands within the sectors, that they need to maintain this perception of uniqueness or premiumness above the rest. And so getting out in front of this to make sure that consumers still believe that they are getting quality products when they buy from these companies was really important for them. And going forward, I think it's really hard to say the impact that will have on consumer perceptions and indeed on their financial outlook. But I think it will certainly be an interesting thing to watch.
Definitely. I'm aware that you've been at Brand Finance for just over 7 years now. So firstly, congrats on that role. But
thank
I'm also
you.
Keen to understand, 7 years also, you know, takes us pre and post pandemic. Have we seen any particular shifts in terms of the demand or desire and even perceptions of luxury goods in terms of their value? Pre and post the pandemic.
Yeah, I think. Thank you for noting my tenure here. I think an interesting sector to talk about in regards to the pandemic is probably hospitality, and specifically hotels. Uh-huh. I think that more than any other sector in the world has been turned upside down. Right. I mean, even airlines, which stopped basically made no money for 2 years, they're back now. Right. It's still the same airlines at the top. Hospitality have had to find new ways to generate business in a different world. A lot of their revenue used to be generated through work travel, kind of executive travel, even for the luxury brands, was generated by executives traveling around the world to make for meetings, to make deals, etc. A lot of that happens digitally now or online, as we're able to talk today. And so these brands have had to focus on something different. It's no longer just a room in a nice place. And they've done this in two ways. One is unique experiences. It's no longer enough for you to just offer the best food or for you to offer the comfiest bed. Consumers are seeking something unique, something they can't experience from their sofas, really, or from their palaces or wherever it is. They want to the ability to go on a luxury safari tour or a private yacht rental, or maybe one day go to space, I don't know. But they're looking for something unique that the mass market consumer can't have. The second thing that luxury hotels are doing is a big focus on both the family experience and the loyalty guest experience. They want to create loyal consumers who know that any experience at, say, a Mandarin Oriental will be a unique one and one where they can be made to feel at home. And I think that's a big difference from pre-COVID, where a lot of this was work travel and it was just about who had the nicest room. It's now about the guest experience more broadly and offering something that you can't have digitally or from your sofa.
100%. Henry, such refreshing perspective that we're getting from you and actually understanding the themes and trends we see when it comes to the world's most valuable luxury and premium brands. Thank you again for your time this evening, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's Henry Farr, Valuation Director at Brand Finance, based in London, helping us unpack the latest report looking at luxury and premium brands. They continue to grow in terms of value, despite sector slowdown concerns. But let me know your thoughts, as Henry's described. We know that Africa and South Africa is largely viewed as a very aspirational space when it comes to luxury brands. But the truth is, they are here. They are present. There's a reason why we have a Rolex gang in South Africa. But I just want to get your thoughts in terms of luxury goods and how you value them and perceive them. Apparel, clothing, is that still something that you prioritize versus what we see in the hospitality space? And as Henry's also noted, vehicles. Are you one of those who loves luxury vehicles but does have a particular preference in terms of the engineering?
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.